Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everyone. My name is Kevin Skerritt, and I am with Amy Zander. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Kevin. How are you doing?
What if your personal business brand
so, now
was
that
so
we
focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you?
Sounds good.
This
so
is what the most successful brands in the world do.
It kind of makes sense that today we talk about
it's about
how
developing
to
a consistent
pick your
brand,
archetype.
No matter
if
the industry,
listeners
location,
who have listened to one
or size
maybe
of the company,
hopefully all 12
discover
of the
your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing
breakdown
strategy.
With their pros and cons
this
are,
is the Brand Archetypes
should,
Podcast,
they should care about
hosted
that
by
one,
Kevin Skerritt and
Jimmy
Zander,
lots of good stuff
owners
you,
of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful,
but
true
you're probably
brand.
At a point now where you want to actually pick your archetype. So let's first recap kind of the big ideas of the archetype. And the whole idea of picking an archetype is that there's power there. So the power of the archetypes as an idea that underlies the building of a great brand, well, the biggest one, I think, is that it's powerful, super, super powerful. These ideas are ingrained in us as human beings. They're easy to understand. They're simple. All 7.5 billion people on the planet understand these ideas, a la Carl Jung's concepts of the collective unconscious, and he's the one who coined the term archetype. So universally understood is big, and another big idea is that it's emotion-based. So all of these ideas are powerful emotions, and that's kind of how we connect with people. So that's why they're good for building our brands. Makes sense, right?
It does. And one of the things that I find extremely helpful about choosing an archetype is, first off, it focuses you on your message and how you're going to deliver your message, the words, the imagery, everything like that. And it keeps you on point. But it also eliminates everything that you're not going to do or not talk about or how you're not going to portray yourself. So sometimes that's just as helpful as knowing what you are going to do versus knowing what you're not going to do.
Right, the focus.
And your marketing. Yeah. So that, and so many people, we've said this before, but so many people, when they try their marketing or they approach it like that, we call it that spray and pray, where they're just going to try a little bit of this or try a little bit of that and see what works, this message, this, and it kind of eliminates.
And it never does.
Yeah. And nothing really sticks. It's all over the place. Yeah. So it really focuses on what you're doing. So that's pretty helpful. So some of the other important concepts to think about with your archetype is that you and your team need to be able to embrace the idea 100%, not like 99.9%, but 100%, everybody on your team. So going forward, we're going to talk about, this great team exercise to kind of arrive at what your archetype is going to be. But the other thing is that the idea needs to be supported from the top down, that decision makers need to be in on the process that we're about to talk about, so that, not like, one group over here goes through this process and figures out the archetype, and then there's somebody that was left out that has the power to just be like, no, that would be disappointing, to say the least. So you want to include your decision makers, and that your goal is to infuse the idea of the archetype throughout your whole entire organization. And that might seem like a daunting task. However, the great thing that you already said about an archetype is we all already understand the concept of every single one of the archetypes because we're human and they're in us. That's why they're an archetype. So just to recap, if you said the word mother to anybody on the planet in their language, everybody would use the same sorts of words, nurturing, caring, providing, that kind of thing. And so we don't need to be told what the archetype is. So if you have a new hire that comes on and you say, oh, by the way, our marketing archetype and our position is the mother, you can spend about 30 seconds explaining what that is. And they've got it. You don't have to spend days of training or read some huge manual or anything like that. It's like we all already know these things. So that's another beautiful thing about the power of adopting a brand archetype, right?
So those are all really good points. As you were talking, I had a client on the East Coast come to mind. There were three partners who launched the company. And at that point, there was probably, 40 or 45 employees. And they were all these alpha male dominant in-your-face type A personalities, and they all had different ideas about how the company should be presented, you know, the building of the brand. And one of the partners said, hey, we really should keep someone in here to walk us through the process. And this was actually before I started with the archetypes. It was the first client that I actually presented the archetype concept with. The point was prior to the discussion of archetypes, each of them thought that their own ideas, because of their type A personality, were the best ones. And although they could understand the other person's thinking, they didn't like it and they didn't agree with it, and they fought tooth and nail to try to get their own way. Well, once we presented the archetype concept, it was so easy for them to each say, yeah, okay, I totally get that idea. I see how that's really powerful. And then they set aside their own personal ideas for this bigger, more powerful idea that they could all agree on. So that getting them to 100% when they had spent years, literally years of arguing with each other, took 5 minutes. It was an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah. It is really cool. My favorite part is the end of the brand discovery session when the archetype kind of reveals itself and they're all like, right?
Yeah. But so, we will get to that.
Yes, we will.
Okay, so step one. The topic of the podcast is picking your archetype. So people who are listening are saying, oh, okay, let's get to it. What are the steps? Step one, take the questionnaire. If you don't know what we're talking about, or if you haven't listened to our past podcast, because we've probably already said it a couple of dozen times, go to brandarchetypes.com. You'll find links in the sidebars and the menu and all over the site on taking the questionnaire. So since you would be the first one going into the process, don't tell everybody in your company about this questionnaire that everybody should take. You go in and you set up your account by taking the questionnaire, and when you do so, say that you are going to invite other people and then do so as part of the process. So set up the account for yourself and for your company and then invite other people in your company. And by doing it that way, you're going to have all of the data from everybody who takes the questionnaire all compiled together, the charts and the data, the columns and the rows and stuff. It's all going to be compiled for you. If everybody takes the questionnaire separately, you still have each person gets their data, but then you'd have to try to figure out how to compile it all together, which is no fun. So do that invite process.
So Kevin, just to be clear, sorry to interrupt you, but just to be clear. So when you say invite people, you're saying when you go take the questionnaire, you log in, create your account, and then inside your account, you can put people's email addresses in there to invite them.
Correct.
Okay.
Now let's say someone gets the invite. They don't really thoroughly review it. They remember brandarchetypes.com. They know that you want them to take the questionnaire, and they go directly to the questionnaire. If someone doesn't follow the instructions and their data is separate from yours, you would just need to contact us and we can actually merge the data together. So there is a merge process that we can do on our end, but it's just a lot easier if people follow the instructions, and it's super simple. So we recommend that you have 10 or 20 people at most taking the questionnaire. If you more data in this case does not necessarily help you. If you pick the right people who know who you are, where the company is going, what your values are, they've got a history with the company. And this might be your spouse or your friends or your family, or, you know, especially for small and micro companies, they don't have teams, right? So 10 or 20 people taking the questionnaire is plenty of data, plenty to work with. And we're even going to take that group and pare it down in the upcoming step here. So step one, take the questionnaire.
Right. And just to add a little bit about who to take it. So, you know, if you have a department in your company that's making the decisions, or a marketing department, or, the group of corner offices, whoever, that's easy to understand. But if you're a solopreneur, or you don't have actual employees or departments or a business partner, like Kevin said, it can be really helpful to have your spouse or partner, your best friend, your somebody who knows your business, even a client or two that you've been working with who really knows your business can help. I mean, it's okay if you're the only one taking the quiz on behalf of your company too. That's fine. But it's just really nice sometimes to get the perspective of other people. And what you're going to find too, especially if you've never really discussed your brand in a formal way, or that people's results might be kind of all over the place, and that's okay, because that just means that you need this, you really need this process, right?
Right. Yeah. And it would, as you would expect, a team that's been working together for a very long time, you know, decades, they're like lockstep. They know what they're thinking. They all agree about where the company is and where it's going. And so there's a lot of consistency. But if you have a startup company, they're all over the place. Just right. out of the chute, they're all over the place. Okay. So since you referred to the brainstorming session earlier, Amy, I'm going to let you talk about step two.
Okay.
This brainstorming session, it is a service that we offer, so we're not going to go super deep into the very, very detailed step-by-step process. But you know, it's a short podcast. We can't talk about a many hours long process of consulting and give you everything in 15 minutes. So let's just cover the big ideas.
Okay? Sure.
So who should attend the brainstorming session?
Yeah. So if you have 10 or 20 people that take the questionnaire, we don't really necessarily recommend that all those people attend the brainstorming session. Maybe, you know,
please. Yeah.
Yeah. Like 5 or 6, 10's a little on the high end, just because there is wisdom in having too many cooks in the kitchen. But you definitely want to have your decision makers and the people that are going to be making the decisions going forward about your brand, your marketing people, things like that. So we can do it in an in-person meeting where we get everybody in the same room, and we can also do it virtually. So we have the capability of doing it both ways. But
whether you hire us or not, we still recommend that this is step two, that you still get together a small group to have this brainstorming session and to compare the data and all that stuff, right?
So, right. Yeah. So we've kind of coined it the BABS, or the Brand Archetype Brainstorming Session. Sometimes I refer to it as the Magical Brainstorming Archetype. Ching! Right? I like to do that.
You have to say it that way with the ching.
Yeah, I know. but yeah, so like we said, who should attend? The key stakeholders, the veto power.
Yeah, you know what? Let me comment about the veto power. Because I've had it happen a dozen times or more, where the person who calls me and says, hey, we'd like to retain you to help us with our brand. And we get down to this step. And I said, listen, it's very important that the people who attend go as high up the ladder as possible. Ideally, I want the CEO or the president there of the company. And the downside of not having them attend, depending on their personality type, depending on how much of a micromanager they are, it's really, really painful to spend dozens and dozens of hours, be excited about a decision, and then have a person who didn't participate come in and say, no, we're not going to do it that way. What are you guys talking about? When they have no idea what they're vetoing, but they have the power to, because, heck, they're the CEO, right? And it's so painful that I ask about it, and yet they go, oh, yeah, we're not going to have a problem, and then it happens.
Right.
So, yeah.
I have experienced that as well.
Yeah.
Or I've had somebody higher up in the company who just didn't buy into the whole process at all to begin with, let alone what the archetype was going to be. And that was kind of heartbreaking too, because I didn't realize that we had left a key person out of the loop. Right. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So we've gone over who should attend, how many people should attend. So let's talk a little bit more, Kevin, about why to do this.
Well, the idea behind the brainstorming session is to take a deeper dive into who you are as a company. Most people, they have this vision. You know, let me just ask you, Amy. You're the CEO of Zedia Media. You know, you have interns and subcontractors, and I don't know. The person who you talked about this morning, are they actually an employee of yours, or are they
acting
as a subcontractor?
Subcontractor.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you have a small team.
I do. Yeah.
And when you came up with the idea of Zedia Media, you had this vision of who we were going to be and how are you going to do your products and, you know, who are you going to be serving in the world and all the, and so over the course of a couple of years, you developed this thing. And in your mind, it's called Zedia Media. But the reality is, it's a super, super complicated entity.
it does have channel partners and affiliates and product variations and services and your approach and your brand. And I can go on and on and all day about all the different aspects of this thing that's in your head that is called Zedia Media. So the mistake that people make is that they think about their company as a single thing when it really isn't. It's like a human being. It's like a any other living person on the planet. How many of the 7 billion people on the planet are identical to each other?
Right. We're complex.
They're complex entities. That's right. That's absolutely right. So for most people, this is the first time that they've ever done an exercise like this. And so to think about your company in that way, and not just to think about it, but to discuss it with other stakeholders, to document it, to talk about the attributes and the aspects and the big ideas. Because this whole process is really not about your products and services. It's about how people think about you, how people feel about you, how you're going to connect with them. That's your brand, right? It's not about your products and services. So for you to get a really good, deep understanding of who you are and how you're going to connect, you have to evaluate all those different aspects. You know, so things like your products, your services, your team, you know, who are you going to be in the future when you grow up? And, you know, how do you fit into the world? And all these different aspects of our, of how we are as a company, most people have never done that before. And when you get your key people together to do that, it's really enlightening. So let's now talk about, we've got the stakeholders are at the table. We got one person at a big whiteboard. You know, what should they talk about?
Yeah. So like you said, whether we're all in the same room together, if we are, then we usually have a big whiteboard, or sometimes we'll do it on a computer screen because we can
at least 6 feet away from each other.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, and funny, when I run these, you know, when I'm writing on the whiteboard, I don't have very good handwriting, and I am a really good writer, but not a great speller. So I always say that to people at the beginning, like, you can tell me that I'm spelling a word wrong or whatever, but when I do it on my computer, I get that little red line. It helps me out. So mm-hmm. That's helpful. Yeah, we have a lot of laughs over my bad spelling. But anyway, so we are either sitting around a whiteboard, sitting around a computer, and no surprise that this is going to involve lots and lots and lots of words. So in a brainstorming session, you know, I always say there's only one rule, basically, is that, you know, anything kind of goes. And if you have a word that is relevant to your industry or your product or something, say like, you know, flibbity gibbet, and you don't need to explain to me or anybody else what that word is. If it means something to you or your company, just put it up there. But we basically walk your team through different parts of your company, like your culture, your employees, your products and services, your competition, the industry, where you want to be in the future. Just there's all these different categories, and we throw tons and tons of words up on the board. And then we, you know, go through this process of categorizing them with different colors and distilling them down. And basically, we get to basically two or three big ideas at the end. And without, like you said earlier, without going into too much detail, because these are short podcasts, that's basically kind of the overall thing. It's really an amazing process to be a part of. And we're not doing it justice here by just describing it. Like, to experience it is really cool. And
yeah,
you also get this really kind of, it's like also like a team building exercise for sure.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I had to tell you, I almost laughed out loud just a bit ago. In the process of explaining this to the team that I'm working with, I will get to this point where I let them know that they may have jargon and vernacular and lingo that I'm not aware of. And one of the things that they don't need to do for me is explain anything.
Right.
And I think that the last two or three times that I've gotten to this point, I said, you can even use a word like flibbertigibbet.
Oh, same word?
I use the exact same word. Yeah. Like, wow, that's pretty
funny. That's
funny. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So just kind of to recap, the whole goal of this brainstorming session is to get the stakeholders together, 3 to 7 people, talk about big ideas, talk about your values, talk about all the attributes of every aspect of who you are as a company, talk about you know, the prioritized list of all of these ideas and words and phrases and concepts and attributes. And then when you start categorizing them, you're going to get this evolution of two or three big ideas. And it really doesn't matter the exact path or whether you're following our process or not. The idea is you as a team get down to those two or three big ideas that you all agree, yeah, this is who we are. These ideas, you know, embody who we are as a company. And it has nothing to do with your products and services. It might be related kind of remotely, but, you know, something like, you know, someone might pick strong customer service or passion or, you know, these are big ideas, right?
Well, humor, customer service. Fun,
yeah, humor. Yeah. Yeah, right. So you might have an idea like customer service that, yeah, kind of relates to a service, right? But it's really a much bigger idea than that.
Right. Right?
So.
Yeah. And so I just want to add one more thing too. Like, so with brainstorming rules, like all ideas are pretty, you know, all ideas are allowed. Everything's off the table. You're just trying to like throw it all up there and get it out there. I will say that, you know, negative words are also allowed, but usually what we try to do, cause they're kind of, when you get down to like some other steps later in the process, they're usually like kind of taken off because they're not mm-hmm. as helpful. So mm-hmm. like if you were going to say, oh, well, like we're really disorganized. So instead of putting disorganized up there, I would, you know, suggest putting organized up there because it's a goal of yours. It's one of your future goals, which yeah. is like kind of one of the categories we talk about is like, where do you want to be in the future? You know, or like if you want to be tech savvy in the future, but you're not using all your technology, you could now. So we try to kind of turn some of those negative things into positives and you can leave the negative ones up there, but they usually just come off later.
Yeah. Yeah, if I have the concept of organization, whether I'm disorganized or I desire to be organized, it's going to be batched in there with lots of other big ideas, like, you know, being methodical and being list oriented. And, you know, you can have all these ideas on the whiteboard. And when you start batching those together, it's going to be pretty obvious that that one all by itself is negative, but it does fit within the group.
Right.
And when you start to define what that batch is and what the big idea is underlying that batch, it's going to be a positive one. So,
right.
Okay. So let's go on to step three. Now that we've got our couple of big ideas all compiled together. So when you finish this brainstorming session and you have your big ideas, now you pull out those results from the questionnaire and you get to compare the two. Compare your big ideas to the prioritized list of the archetypes. And this is absolutely the fun part. So walk us through that. Amy, go ahead.
Yeah. So the first thing you're going to want to do is see if the big ideas that you just came up with in the brainstorming session are aligned with the questionnaire results that you have. And then that always leads to a really good discussion.
I have a business associate who had watched me help his clients. He invited me in to help him with a brand session. And after watching this happen, I don't know, four or five times, and he goes, you know what amazes me? It's like a magic trick that they have the questionnaire results and you don't bring them up until later. Yeah, they know they took the questionnaire and yeah, they got these really obscure kind of bizarre list of words that they didn't really understand. And then they go through this completely unrelated brainstorming session, and then you compare the two, and they always line up with each other. It's amazing how much they line up with each other. So, yeah, it is like a magic trick.
I know. That's why I call it the magical brand magical discovery magic. Session.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
I know.
Right.
Yeah. So you talk about what you want to be seen, how you want people to feel, what you want people to remember, because again, remember your brand is all about feelings and emotions and how you're connecting with people that way. And we've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. People remember how you make them feel long after they remember anything else about you. And that is true of your company as well. So that's why true. Your brand is tied into emotions. And then the archetypes, each archetype is centered around one main big emotion and idea. So that's why this is so powerful, because emotions just are really, really powerful. So then after you look at your brainstorming results and your questionnaire results, and usually people have like about a top three, top four, then you have a discussion about it and you talk about, you know, this archetype versus that archetype. And you might not get everyone to 100% agree, but you're likely you weren't getting anywhere anyway before that. But kind of like kind of like that example you used before about those three guys that were
absolutely they were fighting each other tooth and nail.
Right. So the big difference with going through this exercise at the end, though, is that everyone understands the logic of taking this approach. You now have a good understanding of what some archetypes are. You're leaning towards some or not. And also, too, I think it's worth saying here that, you know, we've been talking about the energy level of archetypes all along, where, you know, there's, you know, a few that are really high energy, a few that are really low energy, and then a few that are in the middle. And generally, even if you don't agree exactly on the particular archetype, generally the energy levels are all grouped together. So everyone's pretty much always on the same page as far as the energy level of the company goes. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely true. And even because this is an intellectual process and of evaluation, it's going to lead to the selection of an emotional connection. It's kind of you're using both sides of your brain. And in a great example of, and we didn't actually do a brand archetype session, but there was a company that I was employed by years and years ago, and I found myself as this highly creative, fluid, nonlinear, abstract thinking person in a team of like 15 highly rigid, linear, methodical, nitpicky, minutia-oriented people. And I was like this black sheep. Had we done an archetype process, it would have been very easy for the company to pick an archetype, and they probably would have picked something like guru or something like that, you know, ruler, something very low energy and very methodical and detail oriented. And I would have been sitting there as a jester thinking, oh my God, these people are crazy. But because I understand that that's the goal, and that the company was picking it because this is what we can all embrace, and I can look at the guru archetype and I can say, yeah, that's not what I feel inside myself, but I get why we're doing it. I understand it. So we would have never have gotten me to agree had we not gone through the archetype process. But had we done it that way, I would have intellectually looked at it and said, yeah, I get that.
Right.
So and the benefit.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You don't have to feel it or agree with it to be able to embrace it,
understand it,
and do it and execute it, right? Because they're all understandable. Yeah, that's a really good point for sure.
Right.
So let's talk about your company's competition for a minute. In our magical brand discovery session, we get a lot of questions about the company's competitors. And this is really, really important. So, Kevin, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. Huge, huge. Well, I think it's the only thing that you need to think about in advance of this session, that if you look at your competitors and you evaluate, are they being consistent and powerful in their messaging? You don't have to have this deep, deep understanding of what an archetype is. But I can take a look at a company, a local company, let's say, if I draw a circle 10 miles around me and I pick a small company, I can look at how they advertise. I can look at their website. I can look at their social media accounts, and I can decide, are they really powerfully connecting with people? Are they consistent in their messaging? Are they talking about themselves and their products? Or are they talking about their values and what they're going to be bringing to their target audience, right? So if I can look at my competitors and decide they're all really doing a terrible job, then it really doesn't matter what I pick, right? But what if I do find one competitor that's like really rocking it from a brand perspective? They're just crushing their messaging and their engagement levels are way high on social media. And you recognize that those levels are so high because they're doing such a good job. Well, now that's a concern. That should be a concern of yours. Now, the good news is, most companies don't have competitors who are doing it very well. Most small and micro companies, especially. In fact, if I'm working with a small and micro company, there's like a 99% chance that they don't have competitors who are doing brand very well, which is really great. But if you do find someone who is doing it really well, you kind of define who they are up front. And try to do something different for them. So if they're being really, really funny online, they're being very jester-like, don't be a jester. Pick any of the other 11, right? Or other 26, if we're going to look at sub-archetypes. If they're being, you know, the mother archetype and they're all about customer service and high touch, you know, relationships, don't do that. Makes sense, right? Just
right.
Don't do what your competition is already doing really well, because you just go head to head on those same emotional connections and they've got a lead on you. They've got time and momentum on their side.
Right. A great example of that is, you know, we've talked about this before, but like a lot of insurance companies are, you know, the jester, and it started with the Aflac duck, and then they all kind of followed suit. And so now they're all doing it. So none of them stand out anymore as the funny insurance company. Right.
Yeah. And so that's the other thing that I would recommend is it's not just your competition. It could be your entire industry.
Right.
If your entire industry is taking a single approach. And really the whole goal here is differentiation.
Yep.
If you are going to have problems in differentiating yourself from other people because they're doing either everybody's doing the same thing or some of them are really doing a great job, it's going to be hard to differentiate yourself from them.
Right.
So do something different.
Right. And you know, I'm sure you encounter this, I encounter this, but people say when we start talking about this brand archetype process, they're like, oh, well, my business is such and such, or I'm in this such and such industry. What archetype should I be?
Oh, yeah.
And we're always like, oh, no. We don't tell you what archetype you should be. We'll walk you through this amazing process so you can discover it yourself. But the only time we ever tell somebody what not to do is when we say, well, you know, your industry or your competition is really heavily weighted this way. So just, you know, don't go that way. Right. That's the only time I tell them not to do something.
And some people will get very passionate about that. They will say, well, there's got to be a best one. There's got to be one that some are better than others for our industry, for our product, for our services, for us as a company, our regionality. We're micro, hyper, local versus no, blah, 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 blah. The best example is prior to Aflac, since you already brought it up, everyone in the supplemental insurance or anyone in the insurance industry, they were all doing Hero or Guru or, you know, something like that. No one was using humor in their marketing. If there was, I couldn't name them. So to say back then that the best approach would be the Guru because that's what everybody was doing and that's what everybody knew, oh, it would be a mistake to go with Jester.
Right.
That just seems really bizarre. Why would you do that? No one's going to take you seriously. And yet Aflac wildly succeeded because of how massively they were able to differentiate themselves.
Right. Yeah. So that leads us into talking about a few words of caution when thinking about your archetype. Don't ever assume that one archetype is better than another for you or another company. They are all very powerful and they all work in their own way really well.
True
that. And don't assume that you can make a mistake picking your archetype. So as long as you can embrace it, you can create a great brand based on any of the archetypes. The only mistake you could make is if your team wasn't in agreement and everybody still kind of went their own separate ways after this thing, or the other really only mistake you could make would be to not pick an archetype.
Right.
That's a big mistake, right?
Yeah, that's the only mistake.
Right.
That's the only mistake is to not pick one. Because if you don't pick one, then you're just going to go back to your old ways.
Yeah.
Or try to find some other approach that is less simple and less powerful.
Like, exactly.
Okay, why would you do that?
Yeah. And then just to reiterate what we already covered, don't assume that there are ones that are better or worse for your specific industry or product or service, because there aren't. And we just covered why that is.
Yeah.
So what kinds of things will slow you down from successfully creating a powerful new brand?
Well, we said it kind of before that this whole concept has to be supported from the top down. If it's not supported from the top down, if the president, CEO of your company is not buying in, or if they could come in at a later date and completely break your decision making and your process, or undermines the process in any way, that's bad. You know, that's death to this process. So get the support from on high first. And if you can't, wow, all that means is you're going to be on a much rougher road. But if you can get that support from the top down, it's a beautiful thing.
Right. One of the next things, and we're going to talk about this in a very upcoming episode, so I won't get into too much detail, but the next step after when you put your how do you say it, Kevin? Put your flag in the sand and say, stake in the sand. I'm going to be this archetype. I'm going to be the outlaw. I'm going to be the jester. Then we're going to talk about, once you've made that monumentous decision, then what do you do next? And we're going to cover that. But the biggest thing is that you aggressively embrace that change and then start looking at every single thing that you do in your company on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis. And that's where we really get into the trenches with our clients and start looking at that and start creating priorities and things like that of things to change and how to align everything you've already been doing to your archetype and then what you're going to be doing in the future.
Come on, Amy. Everything. Come on. Does it really matter what my invoices look like? Come on. Who cares? It does.
And we're going to talk about why in the next episode. Okay. I mean, even, and I like an example you use a lot, even matters how you answer your phone, right?
Absolutely.
We're going to talk about that. Yeah. So, so eventually everyone will adopt the ideas into their way of thinking about your work. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's a process, but that's where we have ways to do that and prioritization and things like that. And we usually work with a company like, you know, 3 to 6 months after they choose their archetype to help them coordinate everything. Yeah.
Keep that momentum going. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I think another thing that will definitely slow down this brand strategy from getting off the ground is if the company goes through the process and they, you know, the part ways from the brainstorming session, they've made this great decision, they've got their archetype selected, and then they go back to the office, everybody goes back to work, and they forget about it.
Yeah.
Ugh. Right. Oh, I can't tell you how many times I've seen that happen, despite the cajoling and the nudging and the, you know, getting them to try to do the next steps. The easiest way to solve that is to assign someone internally as a brand manager. Now, there's a difference in title here, and let me explain them. We define a brand manager as someone who is tasked with overseeing the process. It could be a VP of marketing. It could be a person who's you know, like a marketing new hire that you just need to give someone the task. They don't have to be super, super experienced in a brand archetype process or brand strategy. They just have to understand it's their job to constantly be on the lookout. Now, the other title is the brand evangelist. Now, brand evangelists are not assigned, they're discovered. And what you'll find in your company, and I've never seen an exception to this, is that there are people who see it naturally. They recognize after they've gone through a little training session, they understand, oh, we're a mother archetype. Oh, okay, I get that. They will point out stuff all over the place. They can't help themselves from pointing out that something is not quite mother enough, it's not warm and fuzzy enough, or the way that we're answering the phone, we should probably change our script, or our invoices just don't look very friendly, or, you know, or. Those brand evangelists, it could be the janitor, it could be the front desk administrative assistant, it could be the president, it doesn't
somebody
matter
in the cubes.
Who they are.
Somebody in the cube farm.
Oh, yeah. Anybody in the company could become a brand evangelist, and you have to embrace those people, support them, and encourage them to continue doing that. In fact,
reward them.
And I've seen companies, they go way out of their way in these initial phases to say, you know what, we're going to give, XYZ gift card for any brand errors that you can find. And I'm like, wow, okay, that seems like it could rack up and get really expensive really fast. Well, my question would be, you know, what's the cost of giving away a couple of dozen gift cards versus having brand mistakes all over the place that you're unaware of?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So, the last thing about the brand manager or the brand evangelist, their job really is to be the eyes and ears for the issue and the topic of brand. The brand manager should very frequently, periodically, schedule complete reviews, saying, here's where we are, here are some things that we're failing on, here's how we can improve, here's our course of action. It should actually be a formal process. It doesn't have to be, 40 pages long. You know, a one-pager every couple of months just as an update. If you drop that and let that fade, so does your brand.
Right. Yeah. So we can help with all of this. So the questionnaire is free. Like we said earlier, you can take it, log in, invite other people to it. get your results. So that's, you can take care of that on your own. If you have any questions about that though, or you're not getting your results right or whatever, you know, just give us a call. We can help you. We have conducted these magical brainstorming sessions we've talked about hundreds of times over the past decade and a half. So we can walk your company through one of those. Our book that we have in the works details how to conduct one of those a little bit more thoroughly. But where we, I think, can really, really help people is that once you pick an archetype, we can come in, like I said, in the next 3 to 6 months and help you prioritize and organize how you're now going to make your brand as powerful as you can. And I think that's where we can really, really help your company with that. Because it can be overwhelming when you start thinking about all the moving pieces and parts and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it sure can.
So, yeah. So if you have any questions or you'd like to pursue this concept more, please contact us. You can go to brandarchetypes.com. All of our contact information is there. You can also follow us on all the socials, right? Brand Archetypes. Yeah.
And so you kind of referred to it earlier. I think next week it makes sense that we talk about how to infuse these ideas into your corporate culture.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So I knew today was going to be a long one, but I thank the listeners who have stuck with us and have endured our passionate rambling.
That's right.
Next week will be a little bit tighter and a little bit shorter, but it's going to be just as important because it's kind of the goal. Once you make your decision, you got to get it into the company, right? So we'll talk to you next week, Amy.
Sounds great. Have a great week, Kevin.
You too. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.